as voted for by you guys on the Jibber Jabber community on our Facebook. Today we present to you Dirty Dancing. This was on a poll with what, J-Mac?
This was the best of Patrick Swayze poll. So it was on there with Ghost, Roadhouse, and Red Dawn. A couple of cheeky people tried to add in their own selections, including my father. I was like, hey, cross. Dad, no. that's not how this poll works. I didn't realise that when you're actually creating a poll, you've got an option to stop people from adding their own options. Mm-hmm. So that'll be getting done next time, you cheeky sausage.
Otherwise, we'd just have a never-ending poll. A never-ending poll? Where's your head at?
Your pee was very unpronounced through the microphone there. I just heard never-ending hole. Anyway, so it was a very, very close competition between Dirty Dancing and Roadhouse. I think Roadhouse lost in the end by 2 votes, which was sad for me.
I know. I really, really wanted to do Roadhouse because I love Roadhouse. But you know what? There's loads to talk about where it comes to Dirty Dancing. I think if I was correct, it was our female Jibber Jabber audience that had selected Dirty Dancing, because I could see it was pretty much all female. Yep. Which kind of tells us we've got women fans.
Women, that's the most Scottish word ever. Hey, we've got women fans.
we've got women listeners, right? I can't check this whole time. I knew you were there. It's just about seeding them out. Come on. And of course, what better to get them out of the caves than Paddy Swayze throwing about Jennifer Grey.
big Paddy, right, Paddo?
Big Paddy. So, so let's get into it. You're all here to watch this, and I guarantee you I'll see the stats on new views, because we've gone ahead and done Dirty Dancing. Probably, aside from Sleepless in Seattle, this is probably our most rom-com kind of deep dive that we've ever really done.
It's I would say chick flick.
Chick flick.
It might be slightly politically incorrect these days to call something a chick flick, but for some reason, but it's a chick flick.
It is 100% a chick flick.
And that was reiterated the minute I finished watching it. I was like, that is definitely a chick flick.
I'm going to show you my reaction, right? So, my wife was obviously watching the poll closely. Kevin, Dirty Dancing's won. I'm like, I know. I'm like, right.
I'm so excited.
I'm like, all right, I suppose we better watch Dirty Dancing then. Cool. Right. Halfway through, I'm like, kids are talking in the back. I'm like, shh, shh.
Well, I wasn't, but we'll get into it. It's a funny one for me. This isn't one of the Jibber Jabber where it's so bad that I can just take the piss out of it for an hour. It's not like that. It's just not. It wasn't for me. It's not a film that was made for
J-Mac.
For me.
basically, get at the top of the calling card. Not made for J-Mac.
Not suitable for J-Max.
This film is not based on a true story. Also not made for J-Mac.
I wish it was like, you know, like Highlander 2 bad, where you can just rip shreds out of it for 2 hours and then forget. Like, you're even in that 2 hours, you've done it for 2 hours and you still forgot to mention some things that were really ridiculous. It's not that type of film, but we'll get into it anyway. So yeah.
Before we crack into it, I just kind of want to highlight the absolute mastery and the embodiment of what a man's man really is, Patrick Swayze. Like,
yeah,
like he's got that presence on screen that just, like, guys want to be him, girls want to be with him, and I think he always has.
My feeling on him was, if I knew him when I was at school, I'd fucking hate him. You know what I mean? It would just be that guy who just, you would just be so jealous of him every day.
I don't know, because he was a dancer, and no guy like that ever danced. No, someone that you didn't like, you know? I think you'd get on with him. I don't know, I reckon I'd get on with him.
I watched there's a documentary about him on Sky. On the Sky documentary channel.
I wonder what prompted that poll.
Which is exactly what prompted that poll, because I was absolutely amazed at what a class guy he actually was. He was just, anything he put his mind to, he would do it. There was no trying to do it. He just did it. Mm-hmm. He was just really gifted, and he was taken a lot too soon. A lot too soon? That doesn't make any sense.
I know,
he was taken far, far too soon. It's going to be one of these nights for me, I think. I can feel it coming. Yeah. So that's what prompted the poll. So thanks to everybody that voted again. But yeah,
I've read a lot of trivia on Patrick Swayze. And yes, he was actually, during this movie, he was so adamant on not using stunt doubles and, you know, giving it the absolute best and bringing the best out of Jennifer Grey. That even, you know, the log scene where they're on the log and he's like, here, look at my eyes and all that, and he's trying to teach her the balance.
Yeah.
Well, during that, he fell off that log about 15 times.
I know, he busted his knee up really bad and had to get the fluid drained from it. That, yeah, there's just something about the idea of somebody sticking a big needle into my knee and sucking stuff. It's just like, that's worse than things going in, I think.
So yeah, Patrick Swayze had a lot. Try to imagine Dirty Dancing without Patrick Swayze. And I know that Val Kilmer was originally asked to do Dirty Dancing, and he refused as he didn't want to be typecast and went and done Willow.
You couldn't get much different, to be fair.
But the thing is, you've got Willow to thank, not only because Willow's actually class, and I know some of you at home are right now are going, I hate Willow, or Willow was pish. Willow was class, right? But I know now you can thank Willow even more, because without Willow, you may have had Val Kilmer in Dirty Dancing. And if you think about what Patrick Swayze brought to Dirty Dancing, which was Jennifer Grey, she's like the wind, you know, and that just powerful mastery of the guy that, like I said, girls want to be with and guys want to be, you know. Yeah. And I think that those, that and the fact that most of the scenes, not most, but a lot of the scenes in this movie were actually warm-up shots, that the chemistry was just on point that they used. But we'll get into that as we go through the movie chronologically.
That might answer one of the notes that I've taken.
Oh.
That very fact. So let's go into it.
Set in 1963, in New York, which it was actually filmed in North Carolina, I believe. This movie was directed by Emile Ardolino.
Yes, that well-known director, Emile Ardolino. That's Ardolino. I think that's how you pronounce it. I think it's Emile Ardolino, also the director of Three Men and a Little Lady and Sister Act, I believe. Two films I actually remember really enjoying. Three Men and a Little Lady I haven't seen for a long time, but Sister Act I've seen within the last year.
I think my wife watches that on the reg.
Yeah, it's still a good film, man. Whoopi Goldberg's class. Anyway, we're not here to talk about...
You're talking about
Sister Act. I know.
I love Sister Act, but anyway, that's not what we're talking about.
Exactly. That's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about Dirty.
So, yeah, so she directed it, and apparently...
Emil? Emil's a guy's name.
Is it? I thought Emil, like Amelia.
I can tell you, up until this point, I was really impressed with how much research you've done. And you went, she directed it.
Sorry. Right. I really thought it was a woman that directed it. Just Emile's quite a woman's name, no?
No! it's not.
Can I say I've met many Emiles? Emilio is a guy. Amelia is a woman.
Emil. Is it, see the guy that plays Jeff Goldblum's dad in Independence Day? Mm-hmm. His name's Emil something. Mm. I'm sure. Emil. No, it's not. His name's John.
What I meant,
Emil Hirsch is a guy. There you go, Emil Hirsch.
What I meant though was that see the writer Eleanor Bergstein.
Close enough. Eleanor Bergstein.
Right.
Or Stein. It could be Stein.
She wrote it, right? And this was quite biographical to her time in one of these family places. family places. I say family places. And something like the Kellerman's Mountain House, which is a wee prop thing here from the movie. Shows you all the characters, which you can get in the bonus DVD. Shows you all this. Well, a wee camp like this. Now, I know a wee camp where a lot of Jewish people went on their holidays was like that, right?
Right.
And this is where people like Seinfeld and all that got their start. Now, these used to be popular. Now, even if you watch in the movie, they do say at towards the end, the fella, Max Kellerman, you see him and he's like, you know, they want to travel the world. I don't want to come here anymore. Because that was true. At that point in time, these things were becoming a bit of a, they don't really want to do it anymore. But this was like the last time that these kind of places were the places to go.
It was one thing that struck me about the film was how shit that place actually looked. Like, I mean, you can imagine at one point, obviously it's for more like high society, but to me it just looked like a boring nightmare. Like if I was to go there for a holiday, I think I'd be sorely disappointed. Just walking about in a frock all day, just looking at nothing.
Mate, not only that, right? I said to my wife while watching it, like, where do you go? Like, you pay to get away and you go and you start building the fucking stage for the show and have to do the rehearsals. Like, are they paying you to do this? Like, I thought it was a chill out zone.
As soon as see the part of the movie, again, we'll probably go through, I'm going to go through the movie kind of chronologically anyway.
My wife's answer to that, by the way, but she should have been the fact checker for this. My wife's answer to that was her dad keeps volunteering her for these things without asking her. And I was like, right, that's why she's painting the sets and all that. Her dad, right, as a favour to his friend who owns it. My daughter will do it. And this is why she's a hypocrite. It's why Paddy Swayze's like that. Hypocrite. Right? So, but yeah, let's do it. Let's go through it in long form. So, kicks off and what, she's heading to this place, right? Wee sweet baby who's called Francis.
Was this baby thing, like, I didn't understand that.
This is what everybody called her. I know, the baby of the family.
I know, but there's a baby in every family, but not everybody gets called baby. It's just I find it weird. Her name's Francis, and it's not a horrible name. I actually like the name Francis.
My mom's
name. I happen to like that name. So when he asks her later on, it's like, what's your real name? It's like Francis. I was like, just go with that. The whole baby thing's fucking stupid. It just annoyed me. Also, the narration at the start. There's a very short period of narration that tells us nothing. And it doesn't happen again. And narration should be there either at the beginning to set a scene and like where it's impossible to work out what's happening anyway. It just tells you what you're looking at, essentially. Or at the end to tell you what happened to certain characters. Yeah, Trey went on to have many other adventures. You know, that's another story.
But hey, see if you're not going to have Morgan Freeman narrate. Don't have anyone narrate. It's as simple as that. Maybe was going to the camp to meet with Johnny.
That's an epic Morgan Freeman impression. It might be the best one I've ever heard.
Suck up!
Give Frank Caliendo a run for his money. but I didn't like the narration, and I was glad it wasn't there for the rest of the film because it didn't fit at the beginning. And it opens with Be My Baby, which was perfect for the opening of this film. I mean, it kind of sets the scene for the time period that we're looking at. And also, our dad's car is gorgeous. I don't know what it is, but if they still made cars like that, the world would be a better place, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's nice.
Not with emissions. Emissions were fucking terrible. But when it comes to the way cars looked, man, the 60s, whew, something else.
Awesome. So, yes. you see them, they kind of arrive at this place, and it's clear that baby's dad, baby daddy, as it's clear that he's got a good long-standing friendship with Max Kellerman, the owner of this joint, who's
what gives that away is the fact that when he bumps into him, he's like, hey man, how's your blood pressure?
Exactly,
that was the worst conversation starter I've ever heard. It was like it was kind of showing you that doctors have literally no personality outside their profession.
It was quite, mate, do you know who had no personality? Our ma. What did she do that whole movie?
I thought that was an ornament.
I thought it was a mannequin that he practiced the CPR on. She was just there the whole time, eh? I think at the end she says one thing and then starts dancing with the guy that tried to get with baby. And the guy's like, I'm a catch. It's like, yeah, yeah, hi.
Oh, that chode.
Where did the catch you? The bottom of the fucking river, man. But I think she was quite an ornament. I think it's just Dr. Pattern. Now, I think the reason for that is because that's where their relationship is. This guy clearly is unhealthy because he's quite overweight. And that's where, hey, how's your blood pressure? Because I always see you about my blood pressure. You know I'm going to die soon. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good one. Jesus.
maybe it's a darker joke than it was intended to be. But yeah, so they kind of, you can see that these guys are pals. And he's brought his family and, you know, he's getting the best of the treatment. So baby comes from it's the typical story, right? Same thing, Titanic. You've got the woman coming from a very well-off background and the man quite a peasant. Johnny's just like, you know, man, I just want to dance. I need this gig. Yeah, they're cool, man.
Yeah.
Need this gig.
it's almost like it's almost kind of Romeo and Juliet, you know, yeah. Forbidden love. Anyway, we haven't even got to him coming in yet. So we're still trying straight too far off the course. But loving the music in the film up till this point. The music is perfect. It's one of the areas, one of the few areas of the film I have no complaints about is the music.
Well, mate, if you took the music from Dirty Dancing, you would have only 50% of what makes that movie. Like, that's, I've always said that about movies. Some of the best movies are a combination of 50% music and 50% the movie. Like, if you get those two, if you can get that formula, you're off to it. Because anytime you hear any song at that movie, you will go Dirty Dancing. You'll see him thrown on a bit.
It's one of these films where the music, it's not surprising in any way. It's just music that absolutely fits. Like, if you look at the things that Tarantino does, like, he uses music you wouldn't expect to be used in certain scenes, and it really stands out. Mm-hmm. This film doesn't do that, but it still stands out. Mm-hmm. It's just a really well thought out soundtrack. And then I like the kind of anachronistic. I think that's the word.
Arachnoristic.
Spider. Like
Spider
tunes. Basically, they use music from that time period for most of the time in the scenes where those people are listening to that music as well. Mm-hmm. When it's music that's only for us, it tends to have that 80s sound.
Mm-hmm. I like that the music
really is quite clever.
It teases you a little bit as well. You'll hear little melodies from certain songs. Right, and that I think that's purely for the people that are rewatching the movie. Because when you were seeing that the very first time, it was like, oh, that was nice. But when you're watching it now as someone who's, you know, watched it a million times, when you hear those little piano notes that lead to the songs, it kind of just makes you feel like I'm watching Dirty Dancing. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I think those things are beautiful, man. They miss those kind of things in movies now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just those simple wee things. Even like from Terminator, that wee sound. You know that wee sound in Terminator 2?
Yeah.
Like that's basically a trombone being played like 10 octaves down the way.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But it's those little nuances within a movie I respect that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's 10 out of 10 on music choice. The music had a lot to do with my final score for it anyway. So, but... Did you actually, up until this point in the film, we've not quite met Johnny yet. Do you find anybody interesting yet?
Yes. There's one person I find interesting through the whole movie. And who's for that? Me, she's an MVP. Lisa.
Lisa.
She's my MVP. I'm sticking with it.
Right. Lisa's her sister.
She's the...
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
She was robbed at the end, by the way, just saying.
I'm genuinely... I'm not really invested in anybody yet. the first person who comes in that I actually do care about is Johnny Castle, which is the cheesiest name I think I've ever heard for a character.
He was supposed to be Italian as well.
I'd read that, and when Swayze got the part, they changed it.
Oh, shit. His name
before, Casolino.
Johnny Casolino.
Johnny Tortellini. Johnny Carbonara. This could go on and on and on.
But yeah, we see him kind of strutting with his pack and his, he starts to...
His leather jacket over his shoulder.
Yeah, it was
he
very...
He oozes cool, man. He oozes sex appeal.
Yeah.
I mean, you just look at him and go, yep, I would.
As a guy, yeah. And so does Jennifer Grey, because he catches her eye right away.
It was her nose, I think.
Not anymore.
He's going, what's that? What's that stuck to that nose? Oh, it's a girl. Yeah, she's updated her nose since that movie, I think.
Installed an update.
aye, she's done a defrag.
I could barely recognise her when I seen her interview.
I know. Looks nothing like her, really. You would walk past her on the street.
You wouldn't know it was her, yeah.
No.
But she doesn't look like... See when you say, oh, she's had surgery. You wouldn't look at her and go, oh, she's fucked her face. Like, her face looks actually really nice. So yeah, it's not like it's been done in.
It's like Jennifer Aniston. Like, she's had work done, but it's been good work. Good work. I mean, you see a lot of people... I might have mentioned this before on a previous podcast, but it always makes me smile. And it was Bill Burr talking about folk with plastic surgery. He said, you don't get plastic surgery on your face. He says, if you get liposuction and they fuck it up, you can wear a shirt. There's no shirt for your face. And then he said, what would you, he says, can you not just look at other people that have had it done and look at that and go, right, they haven't quite figured it out yet? Would you rather be 50 and look 50 or be 50 and look like a 25-year-old lizard?
Well, she doesn't look like a 25-year-old lizard.
She looks
insane.
Good.
So yeah, she, we see Johnny. And this kind of kicks off what the movie's kind of about. Because it's only at a certain point where I was like, right, so this is the plot of the movie. At this point, I'm still like, okay, it's camp, you know. It's I don't know what I want to do with my life. Kind of, you know, it's kind of setting up with the whole. And again, this is one of those things for me when I was watching it. I was like, you can watch this through different perceptions, right? There's the perception of the love story. Of that, that girl wants to meet the kind of the man of her dreams, and he pretty much is everything that's that, right?
Yeah.
Or you can watch it as a dad, right, coming to terms with the fact his baby's no longer his baby anymore. And I think that's the one with deeper meaning for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen to all of us, really. All of us that have got kids.
I have three girls. It's going to happen three times to me. My guys are all right, but my my girls.
Yeah, I mean, it's also it can be looked at a few different perspectives. It's like the father losing the daughter, not losing, but you know, she's getting older, and she's not the wee girl anymore. She's not the baby anymore. There's also the straight love story. There's also coming of age. There's also another way to look at it would just be two people finding themselves, really finding out who they really are.
He kind of knows who he is more than she does. He knows himself. That's why he does. I don't find that he explains himself. You notice at every point where he's challenged, he doesn't explain himself because he doesn't feel like he has to.
You know that obviously the kind of rich women on this estate were using a lot of the guys for their own kind of sexual gratification when their husbands went around, like where that. I mean,
even when they were around,
waiters, waiters, dancers, everything. So he would have partaken in that for quite a long time. But then, at this point, at the age of 24, I believe he's meant to be in the film, he's kind of realised that wasn't it's not the right way to live his life, and that they were using him, and he wasn't going to let it happen anymore. Eventually, but as part of the whole kind of finding yourself.
Mm.
What was I going to say? What you said earlier on about a lot of warm-up shots, kind of be like they ended up using them in the film. One thing I've written down here is ugly cinematography, because I think there was a lot of shots in the film that just weren't very pretty.
Which one?
Especially, particularly the dance training and the dance montage, the dance training montage. I found that there were shots there that were just really poorly framed. Too far away to be a close-up, too close to be a wide shot, and just unequal partition of the framing. It's just a lot of stuff that caught my eye in a bad way, but that might be the reason. Obviously, like you said, their chemistry on the warm-up shots was really good. We know that they two didn't get on well at all when they did Red Dawn, and he had to convince her to come back and do this, and like say, all right, listen, we'll start clean slate. But then they start bickering on the set and stuff like that. Before every single scene, they were bickering. And then the producer and director sat them both down and made them sit and watch their screen tests to remind them of how good their chemistry actually is. And that kind of set them back on the right path. But yeah, cinematography, wasn't keen on it. The guy who was in charge of it was a guy called Jeff. I think it's Jeff Juss or Jeff Juice. I'm going to go with Juice because it sounds cooler. He did. He also filmed such classics as How Stella Got Her Groove Back, which I've never heard. But here's the surprising bits. He also did the cinematography for Joyride, also known as Roadkill, which I really enjoyed.
Candy cane.
You really ought to get that fixed.
Bring some pink champagne.
Pink champagne.
That's a class movie.
That I really enjoyed that film, and it was well shot. It was good. And also 24 episodes of one of my favorite shows of all time, Dexter. So the guy obviously really did kind of know his stuff, or he found his craft, but this definitely is not his best work. IMO.
I mean, obviously.
In my opinion.
I found with you saying, like, when we kind of look at the characters a little bit, so the movie kind of progresses and Penny gets pregnant, right? But you notice they don't allude to, like, the wording is never she's pregnant. Someone says she's up the duff, right? And then they say her situation.
She's in trouble.
Right, but see, and that means abortion. They also stay away from the word abortion. Don't say it once. They don't even say it once in the movie. So they say her problem. She's in trouble. You're the one who got Penny in trouble.
You can imagine the stigma that went with being pregnant outside of marriage back then, especially in kind of those kind of circumstances where you are in the limelight for a bunch of rich people.
Well, here's the thing.
Be the best situation. So Penny was his dance partner to begin with. Yeah,
who was his girlfriend in the very, very, very young days. So it shows there's a long, rich history between these two. But it's mainly like it's a strong brother sister kind of bond. Now, a couple of things about that relationship. When you're first introduced to Penny and Johnny, right? I was going to call him Danny there because of Greece. when you're introduced to them, they do kind of look like a couple, and you see Jennifer Grey's character, Baby, kind of admiring from afar, almost like, if she wasn't there, I'd be all over that, right?
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, there was a shot that made me go, wow, that's quite a significant shot, because it's a subliminal message almost. There's the shot where, obviously, at this point, Baby has got the money from her dad to give to Penny for the abortion. But what needs to happen now is the fact that Baby's going to learn her dance moves to do the dance for the big finale at the end of the season with Johnny. And it's that part where Baby's quite shy and she gets with Johnny, right? And they're doing the moves and she's kind of like all stiff. And then Penny comes in and kind of brings comfort to it and starts moving with them, right? Yeah. Now, see, if you look at the eye contact between Johnny and Baby, right? It's intense, like they want each other. And Penny is, her whole persona at this point is very complimentary, right? So that's like, do you know what? At this point, you as the audience can shift from going, there's nothing between these two, and she's all for, she's like us at home, she's all for these two getting together, right? Right. And it's all in the movement, it's all in that scene. And I don't know if it was deliberate, but at that point I was like, do you know what? She'll never be an issue for this relationship between the two. She will never be an issue. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it oozed that. And I thought that was amazing chemistry.
It kind of started off kind of showing that she might be a kind of antagonistic character. Like it was a bit where Baby actually says to her, you're a wonderful dancer. And then I don't know why.
Yeah, I left home. That's all I ever wanted to do.
My mom kicked me out when I was 6 months old. Like, wait, so? You just said you're a good dancer.
It's resentment. Bitch. She's got that built-up resentment for people total, like her.
Total bitch mode just came right out. Just by getting a compliment off somebody that she kind of perceived as a threat at that time.
You can't understand that, though, because clearly that just kind of illustrates the fact that through her life she's had to fight to get to where she is. She's got to fight for everything that she's got. And people like Baby have never been good to her. So she's just cutting to the chase. Yeah, well, whatever. Right? She's clearly been treated shit her whole life and looked down upon by those kind of people.
That scene where Baby gets taken into the kind of the dance club for the workers. That's the only bit of that resort that I think I could enjoy. Even as somebody that, I mean, I don't dance, I hate dancing, but I could just sit and watch that. Plus Penny is one gorgeous looking woman. Cynthia Rhodes, she was beautiful. They actually had to make her up to look uglier for the abortion scene. Or the being ill after an abortion scene. Yeah. Apparently they just wiped all her makeup off, hoping that that would be enough to make her look kind of rough. And they were like, shit, she's still amazing. So they had to kind of add more crap to her to make her look a bit more weathered and tired. And
I think she's a wee underrated character in this, you know?
I think she gets a decent enough amount of screen time. It's just nobody ever talks about it.
Right.
Everybody only ever talks about Baby and Johnny. It's the two main characters.
But there are other MVPs. And another character that for me was brilliant is the Baby's dad. I mean, look at that relationship she has with him, where she can go up to him and say, Dad, I need money, but I can't tell you what it is. And he's like, you know, I trust you. You know what I mean? So he gives her the money. And he's not unfair. He's never unfair to her.
But, yeah, I mean, her dad's played by the late great Jerry Orbach, who's
Luminate.
The guy's eyebrows are legendary. Never mind the rest of them. Uh-huh. I mean, he just you love him in everything that he's in, but I can't look at him without hearing dum dum, you know, that Law and Order sound. I just anytime I see him, that's what I can see. He was also he was in Universal Soldier as well. He crops up all over the place.
He's in Beauty and the Beast.
Of course, he was Lumiere, which totally you wouldn't know it. Like a lot of time when you watch like a Disney cartoon, you'll hear a voice and you'll go, "Oh, that's Eddie Murphy, that's Tom Hanks, that's whoever." But with him, it was like, "I wonder who plays Lumiere." You look it up and you go, "What?
Baby's like, dad?
Wow!" there's definitely a lot of trust between her and her dad, which could kind of make you feel kind of more inclined to feel sorry for her for the things that she's having to do behind his back, because she would have had to think long and hard about doing any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. She was a good wee girl. But again,
speaking of good wee girl, I always found that her age is left kind of ambiguous, because our dad treats her like she's 13, 14, 15 year old girl, but she's obviously doing very adult things with a very adult guy. Mate, I actually got my wife to look it up last night to find out how old they were supposed to be.
She was 17, right?
18.
18.
She was 18 and Johnny was 24. It's never mentioned in the film. Now, I'm kind of wondering if somebody just made that up after the fact so that it was all right for the stuff to
she
go
was actually
on.
27 actually in the movie.
I know, she looks really young. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'd have put her at maybe 19 or 20. Mm-hmm. So she's, unlike a lot of Americans, she looks very young for her age. Americans tend to look old for their age until they get old, then they look young for their age. It's strange. It's quite backwards. So I 27. So she must have been about the same age as Patrick Swayze then.
Probably at the time. Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah. The relationship between her and her dad, you do as a father, you have to kind of feel his side of it as well. You know, and it's not just, and it's not like he's a horrible guy. A lot of these things where it's the kid rebelling against the parents, you hate the parents. I mean, you can't hate the mum because she's plastic, and you can't hate the dad because he's Jerry Orbach and he's just sound. But that's one bit that got me is when the doctor came to Penny's aid, when her dad came to Penny's aid, when she was ill after the rusty knife going in. Him and Johnny had a slight exchange. I wouldn't even call it an exchange. It was just like a wee kind of look between them. Mm-hmm. And then she apologizes for the way her dad treated Johnny. She apologizes to Johnny. And I'm like, what did he actually do? He didn't do anything. He did literally nothing. There wasn't even an argument. Was it just a feeling? Just a look?
Disappointed. And it's something that he's obviously very used to. See that face that her dad done after she was like, he didn't steal the wallet because I was in his room. And then the next time you see him, he's like, ah. Like, no.
She's getting rude.
Oh, yeah, goodness, that's like so rude. Oh, yeah, goodness, that's like a dick.
That's a slice of clam.
Right, but his face, and see, I'm watching this with three. I've got three girls, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, if I'm looking at this movie through the perception of Johnny, I'm like, fuck him. If I'm looking at it through the perception of baby's dad, I'm like, no, hell no, you know.
So I suppose that's clever. It means that regardless of what angle you're coming at it from, it's got some appeal, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I would like to have that relationship with all of my children, that he has that trust and he knows he can trust his daughter to the point where she doesn't have to tell him things and he'll be able to just give her money, and that's something that he can trust in with her. I think that's the ideal relationship between any parent and child, is trust.
Absolutely. Oh, that's beautiful, Kevin.
It is, man. And I was watching that and I was like, I mean, but the old codger's stealing everybody's wallets, man. And then they all fall out the bag and baby's like, here, take all these wallets, and didn't even question it. Are they all these wallets yours? Here, let me help you up with all of them.
I mean, that's probably the one kind of bit that made me chuckle, was obviously these the Liebersteins or whatever their names were. Mm-hmm. I think it was something like that. They'd been the ones that'd be going about the rich estate stealing people's wallets. Mm-hmm. And nobody would suspect a lovely wee old couple. So
I like how it all kind of jigsaws together. I mean, the plot basically is basic. Woman gets pregnant, need a stand-in so that she can go and get an abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine reading that now. Like, here's the plot of this movie coming out. A woman needs to go get abortion, so someone has to stand in and dance with her and end up falling in love with the guy that she's doing it with. But I think there's many different angles and many different wee tidbits in this movie. Like, look at how baby comes into it. She's like a fish out of water. She's surrounded by people. It's like, well, these are all the cool kids and all these people. Life's going on without me, really, because I've been sheltered. You know, I've been the baby. So I come in and all these people are dancing like this and she's just like, oh, you fucking wet, man. Yo, where'd I go, man? Who? Right? So she's kind of stumbling across all these people like dry humping each other, right? And she's kind of been like, well, this kind of feels good, but, you know, I still don't belong.
I know it's called dirty dancing, right? But there was just a wee bit too much of the... I mean, it's not even a dance move. It's just ramming your dick into somebody's belly. That's not dancing. That's,
and by the assault. Way, how much does that Robbie character look like Todd?
He does. He is a bit Toddish, actually. I see what you mean.
He gets a bit in that movie, right?
You should do a face swap with him. That entry you did with you and I, you should do a face swap to... Todd and Robbie. I did it with Pennywise. Perfect. So you can do it with your
I'm sure
his name's Robbie.
I think he kind of... I know his name is Robbie. He kind of looked very Toddy, yeah. I just remember thinking that. Let's take a moment as well to kind of... We've kind of appreciated the Patrick Swayze side of things and what he brought to that movie. Jennifer Grey and his chemistry was really off the charts. You feel it when you're watching it, for sure. So Patrick Swayze had his fingers on the pulse there. And I think, you know, after this movie was the time that Jennifer and Matthew Broderick, at the time they were together, right, had that accident where, and I think that stopped Jennifer progressing as an actress. But I think where she would be today, because she was very talented.
Just for anybody that might not know what happened.
I was wanting to flush by that, but why?
No, we don't flush by anything on this show.
She killed a mum and a daughter.
I think Matthew Broderick and her were dating at the time. I think she was just about to leave to do like a promotional tour
of Dirty Dancing.
Which
she had to skip.
Because basically they were driving on the wrong side of the road in Ireland and wiped out a mother of the age of 63 and her daughter at the age of 28. 28-year-old was a woman called Anna Gallagher and her mum was Margaret Doherty. Totally wiped them out, killed them on the road. I didn't look into it enough to find out if he, I don't think he did any time, but I think
it was £150. £150 of a charge.
£150, 3 points.
Yeah.
No joke.
And then he wrote a letter. Matthew Broderick wrote a letter to the family, just basically saying, sorry, eh?
I'm awful sorry about that, eh?
do you know?
So she happened to be in the car with him at the time. So obviously that's played a part in the fact that her career didn't take off the way it could have.
Which it should have, really, because she was really, really talented. I think a lot of, and she kind of shows this, the baby character has this, is a lack of confidence. I think that knocked her confidence. Same with dancing, you know, that she didn't believe that she was that good a dancer, even though her dad was like a top of the tier kind of dancer for not a circus, but it's some sort of dancing. But he was right at the top of his game at that. And she was obviously a really good dancer. And so she had her confidence knocked as a dancer to the point where she wouldn't even dance at weddings because people expected something amazing. She did feel like she could deliver that. But then she had cancer. And when she beat that, she was like, you know what? I'm actually, life's too short. I should be dancing. And she went on that Dancing with the Stars and won it.
That's cheating. She was already a dancer.
That's cheating.
That was a sob story that got her onto that show then.
I don't know.
They love a sob story in these things. But anyway, it wasn't even a joke, but she already had a lot of dance experience. And the whole idea of Dancing with the Stars is that the people shouldn't have a lot of dance experience. Well, that's part of the fun.
She won. Well, I don't know, because she never danced since bloody Dirty Dancing, so.
Yeah, but look what she was doing. It's not like she was doing a quick cha-cha. She was doing some pretty heavy stuff. Just talking about the dancing for a minute.
The dancing, such an old man's way to say it.
Let's go to the dancing.
Were you at the dancing last night?
the scene on the log that you mentioned earlier on, that scene and the scene in the lake were probably the two best shot scenes in the film. Just going back to what I was saying earlier about the poor cinematography. Those two, you could tell there was some time and effort spent to get those looking as good as they possibly could.
And you know, it was absolutely freezing in that water, and that's why they don't zoom up to the faces, because their lips were blue.
Well, you could tell by the state of her nipples.
The state of her nipples. The state of them.
If the lake froze over, she could cut her way out with them.
Oh, man. God dang. So she would have been, I think she could have done so much more if she'd have kept going. And you know what's quite strange? The original part of Baby was considered to be played by Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, who fit face.
Then became Matthew Broderick's wife.
Ah, oh, nice. Serendipitous. She was really hot back in the day. I've seen Flight the Navigator and that. I used to fancy the pants off her. I really did. She was...
Hi, Mel.
To be honest, I could see her in that role. You know, it's not like I couldn't see her in that role. I don't know if she would have danced as well as Jennifer Grey. Actually,
she could have played her mum really well. A puppet.
Hello, baby. So, yeah, I could see that. How long do you think, how long does it actually take Johnny to train her how to dance? Because at the start, she can't dance. She has no rhythm.
I think it's like 2 weeks.
That's impressive, like.
Because
it's a bit unrealistic. There's no way you could teach anybody to dance that well in 2 weeks.
Because there's at one point she's like, we need to get this right because there's only 3 days until it's the show day. I'm like, 3 days?
Yeah, that's some good going. Like, actually, it reflects how quick they had to shoot the film as well. They only had 40 days to shoot the film. And only 2 weeks of prep before that as well, rehearsals. Not a long time to shoot a film of that kind of magnitude.
Hmm. And you know, they made sure to hire all dancers because Flashdance, which Penny was in, by the way, Flashdance had a lot of... Penny was in it, I know that. Flashdance had a lot of actors in it that couldn't dance, so they had to hire stunt doubles that would dance as for them. So for this, they were like, right, we're going to hire anybody. They've got to have a dancing background in order to be in this movie.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why Patrick Swayze was like, this is my movie. And Patrick Swayze was also offered £6 million to do the sequel and declined. He said, purely just because sequels are shite.
I know. And then four years later, we get Terminator 2.
I know, right? I think maybe if Paddy Swayze was in the second one, maybe it would have turned out a little bit different, but who knows?
Have you ever seen the second one?
I've not really spent a lot of time watching the first one.
No. I've seen the second one. The second one's got I can't remember his name, is a wee Mexican guy from The Terminal. You know, the guy that drives the buggy around the airport. It's him. He's like the Patrick Swayze-ish part. There was also a third one, which I have no idea about until earlier tonight.
Is that the Havana thing?
No, that's the second one. The third one is something else. It starts with a C. And there was a remake of Dirty Dancing, a TV movie version of Dirty Dancing, written by the same... Oh, no, it wasn't written by her. Sorry, that was a mistake I made earlier on.
It was the first time.
written by her the first time. But no, nothing to do with her. But remade for TV, and this was in 2017 with a solid IMDb score of 3.1.
Yeah, I think I did see that on telly. My wife.
This has got 7. The Dirty Dancing's a 7 on IMDb. That's pretty respectable. Why do I find that the more I'm talking about the film, the more I'm convincing myself it wasn't as bad as I thought it was?
It wasn't. It really wasn't. Right. I actually really enjoyed it. I was watching it we'll kind of go through it a bit more chronologically so I can get to the end, because to me, like, what a crescendo. So Johnny has to teach baby how to dance, and while doing so, he rejects a sexual offer from, what was her name? It starts with a V. Valerie, which is one of the old guys who's paying Johnny to teach her.
Yeah.
I'm sure her name was Valerie. Right, so the woman with the black hair is like, I've got something sorted out for us, and he's like, nah, and baby's like, painting away. She's like, that's my boy, that's my boy. Yeah, that's like, yeah, yeah. Right, and because he knocks her back, she goes away and fools around with Robbie, to which the MVP of the show, Lisa, that's baby's sister, goes to meet with Johnny for the very same reason, opens the door and sees her giving it. Sees Valerie giving it. I'm sure her name's Valerie, sees her giving it reverse cowgirl on him, and is like, oh no. Now, this is the same night that that Johnny and baby go to Pound Town, right? So in the morning, they're both leaving their respective rooms, right?
See, when you say Pound Town, it just sounds like a discount shop.
Pound Town. And they're both...
You know the type of shop where there's a single mother standing outside it with four kids arguing with the security guard because he's accused her of stealing when she has?
When she has. Well, that's not what this is, right? So she sees him saying goodbye, Johnny saying goodbye to baby in the morning, right? And she's like, oh, Disney want a piece of this, but wants a piece of that, aye? Goes and kind of grasses that all these wallets have been stolen, says that, that it was him, and then Johnny gets sacked. And what I like about it, right, is the fact is like this. I told them it wasn't you, and that I was with you. He's like, oh, I got sacked. But I told them I was with you. They're still sacked for that. Still sacked, right? And what one of the things I don't get, right? So obviously he's been sacked and he's in trouble. What I don't get is... Right, so she's had this lovable romance with him, right? She said to him already, you know, if I don't feel like I feel right now for the rest of my life, you know, that'll be great. So what happens, right? And he's like, he's at his car and they're saying goodbye. And he's like, I'll see you. I'll see you.
Yeah.
And then drives away, right? I know they didn't have mobile phones back then or email addresses, but she could have got his Morse code or his fax number or something.
His Morse code.
Right. Right. Like, was that the end? She seemed gutted. Oh no, he's been sacked anyway. Right? She cares about him that much that she's going to risk upsetting her dad and saying, look, I was in his room, right, to save his ass.
And he was in my room, if you know what I'm saying.
And then he's just like, right, I'll see you. She's like, bye. Like, not. It reminds me of that episode of Rabsy Nisbet. For anybody in the UK here, Rabsy Nisbet, where the family go to the Costa del Sol, and as Gash and Bernie meet their holiday romances, and as they come off the plane, Gash is like, I love you. I'll phone you every day. I'll phone you every day to you, as we missus, right? He's like, mwah, mwah. And he's kind of getting pried away from her. She's like, I love you too, Gash. And then the camera goes to Bernie and his missus, and he's got a rolled up bit of paper. He goes, right, dog, it's been great. Pops her in the back of the head.
My
dog has been glass. Bangs on the back of Eden, walks away.
So to translate that for people that don't understand, Kevin, they rolled up newspaper and he hits her gently on the back of the head and says, "It's been real, darling. I'll see you soon."
It doesn't even say I'll see you soon.
See you later.
I'll see you later. Bye. So it kind of just for me, it was a wee flashback to that. I was kind of like, why would you not say, you know, I'll see you again soon. I'll write to you. Let's keep this going. Just because I've been sacked for here. I mean, you're only here on holiday. I'll meet up with you. I've got a car, right? Right? No, there was none of that. And you don't really see him till the end. So that kind of had me going like, all right, come on. Moan, baby. You should have made a fight. And moan, Johnny. You should have kind of made plans, man.
Again, this just goes to how I was feeling last night. I wasn't even bothered. Honestly, I wasn't... like I said at the beginning, man, as much as we're talking now about the aspects of the film that were quite well put together and that, just for me, just watching, I just couldn't get invested in any of it. I really couldn't. So when that happened, I really was like, okay, what's next? And then we get the kind of crescendo dance scene.
Before we
talk about that, let's talk about Lisa.
I was like, don't skip past the MVP, because everybody done that in the movie, right? First off, right, she's been sound the whole way, right? She's overlooked by her dad, clearly, to the point where she's like, you know, maybe he's going to look at me now because you're not the baby anymore. That's you hanging about with boys in leather coats and all that. You're not his baby, which is clearly happening through the movie. You're seeing the dad going, it's time to let her go. She's not a baby anymore. So she's putting in time, man. She's up there getting a hawk, hawk, a choke, a hawk, a hawk. Mate, what is that song? Do you know?
I think I texted you and I said it sounds like a slowed down yodel.
Right, here's the thing. She wrote that for the movie, right?
She did.
She wrote that song purely for the movie. And had to learn how to sing it like she was not a singer.
Right.
So
is she a singer then?
She's better than that.
Yeah, that wouldn't be difficult. The thing is, actually, that's a lie, because when obviously I was watching it with my wife, it's the only good excuse to watch it.